Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Susanna Constantine, and this is My Wardrobe Malfunction, a podcast where a special guest and I discuss and dissect clothes, and quite frankly, anything else that crosses our minds. If this is your first time with us, fantastic. But what the hell's been keeping you? There are so many more episodes to catch up on, with wonderful people like Dan Snow, Alexandra Shulman, and my cycling buddy Jeremy Vine. But let's get back to today's guest. She's a presenter, speaker, writer, and karate black belt, Gail Porter. She's also the subject of the extraordinary BBC documentary, Being Gail Porter, an unflinching account of the challenges she's faced with her mental health. It's deservedly been nominated for a BAFTA, and I'm really hoping it wins on December the 8th, though she's already a winner in my mind anyway. So, let's grab the handles, open my wardrobe doors, and find out what's inside. Hello, everybody. And today I am with someone who I have so much admiration for. And that is Gail Porter, Gail, I want to start with what's been happening to you now, and then we'll wind the movie backwards. But you have made the most incredible documentary called Being Gail, which has been nominated for a BAFTA. How incredible is that?
Well, I got an email on, I think it was Wednesday morning this week, and it just came up with a heads of fight BAFTA, and it said, you're nominated. And, you know, it's been a weird few months for everybody. So I was thinking, is this a joke?
Yeah.
And then I had a shower and came back and had a look at it again. And I was like, that's the proper BAFTA folk. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I burst into tears because that's what I do. I think I won like a Weetabix pencil case from like a Lucky Dip in Asda when I was about 12. And now I've gone from that to a BAFTA.
Yeah. And this is serious. But I watched it, Gail, and there were so many emotions that it brought out from heartbreak to fury and rage, both towards you, I have to say, and to members of your family. Because you've been through so much. There is no getting away from that. But I felt that it's like I see you now and I see someone who is so incredibly beautiful. You know, you really are. But you are your own worst enemy. And I was kind of going, Gail, for God's sake, I wanted to come up and slap you and hug you and grab you and say, wake up. Look how incredible you are.
Slap me, hug me, do all that. I'd quite like that. Anything, any human contact.
But I mean, how was it to make it? Was it very cathartic? Because basically you go very in depth into, you're on this journey of your own mental health, trying to discover what it is, you know, what it is, disorder, you don't like that word, that you have. And then along the way, you go into your past and you meet people who were part of your life back in the day. What was it like to do that?
Well, to be honest with you, when the BBC first got in contact with me and said, we'd like to sort of look at your life, initially I just thought, you've got to be kidding me. I can't go through that again. I really can't.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I've had the best times, but then when I've had the worst times, they have been the worst times.
Mm.
So I was thinking, you know, I was getting myself back on an even keel. I've got a nice little flat, albeit I'm renting, but I don't care because I'm happy. It's my happy place. And then I was thinking, do I really want to go back and rake through all these things? And also, do I want people to know about my family and how, you know, we weren't dysfunctional. It was kind of, they were very stoic. We weren't a cuddly family. So I think that's where my cuddles come from. I want to cuddle everybody all the time. So this has been a shocking year for me because I can't touch anybody.
Yeah.
But yeah, my mum and dad were not very cuddly. So I didn't know. And also I've lost my mum, and my dad was actually in the film, as you've seen. And I remember him just saying to me, he said, "Oh, you didn't let me down. You've let yourself down." And I was like, seriously? That's just, you know, he didn't know how to communicate properly and say that he never would say, "I'm proud of you," but yet he'd tell his mates at the pub that he was proud of me. So that was going to be a really difficult thing for me to deal with, knowing that I was not going to get like a hug from my dad, or a hug, well, obviously not from my mum, because my mum passed away when I was 60. So that was the thing, to get my head around, do I do this, do I not? And then I thought, you know what, life is too short, and... If this can help someone, I think at the end of the film, I think I've not seen it all properly the whole way through, because I don't like watching. And it was such a hard topic. But I just thought if this helps someone, because so many people go through so many different things, and they think, "Oh, I'm on my own." But I just thought, I'm going to do it. It was really hard. If you ever speak to the director, Anne Claire, bless her, I think I fell out with her every day.
Really, but it's a very important piece of work that you've done, because it is so raw. And you know, one of the many things that are so charming about you is that you have this vulnerability and you wear your heart on your sleeve. And I mean, I might be talking bollocks here, I don't know, but at the same time, you try and compensate with that with this toughness. But I feel that tough side of you isn't who you are at all. That's just your kind of armor, if you like.
Oh, 100% is my armor. Yeah. I think it's tough, and then I'll come home and I'll have a good cry and think, hopefully I've just fooled everybody with my toughness, like my ninja-esque. I do think I'm tougher than I am.
That's not a bad thing, though. I think we all need that, don't you? Especially as women, we need to feel that we can protect ourselves somehow, especially emotionally.
Yeah, but the thing is, I cry at everything, literally everything. My daughter even sits with me and she's like, "Mum, I can't even watch Gogglebox with you because you cry at something." I have to record Blue Planet with David Attenborough because I can't watch it with her. Because she's like, "I can't watch it with you. You're just going to cry."
Oh my goodness. Well, you're like, but that's such good. I mean, I listen to you say that. I hear you say that. And I think, my God, I feel envy, because I can't cry. I'm so shut down as a person. I cannot cry. I haven't cried properly for about 20 years, 30 years. I don't remember the last time I cried.
I try it all the time. I don't know where it comes from, but it just comes from, and I just need to let it out. Even if I go up to the tube and a nice lady or a gentleman will come up to me and say, "I saw your documentary and I need to tell you about my life," and they'll tell me something, I start bursting into tears. I'll say, "I am totally useless." And then I want to come back, but of course you're not allowed.
Yeah, that's so hard. For you, I can imagine that has been so hard. So with your BAFTA nomination, what's been the reaction from your friends?
Well, because it came through, in the morning, I just put it everywhere. I was like, I just like retweeted everything. And I was like, "I got this from, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God." I just put it everywhere because I thought we've all had such a shitty year. And I couldn't help myself. I was so beyond excited. And I just thought, oh my gosh, I must tell everybody. And then it was literally like the postman, I went, "Excuse me, I've just been nominated for a BAFTA." And he's like, "All right, girl, see you tomorrow." It's like, "Okay, bye then, bye." "Hello, anyone speak to me? I've got a BAFTA nomination." And I'm sure we won't win, but obviously it's a team effort. You know how these things work.
Well, I think to be nominated, quite frankly, you've already won. You know, you really have. And just to have got that, you know, to have got that piece of work out, is you've won. And other people who can identify with you have won as well, because you've given so much of yourself. And I think it's incredible. With Honey, your daughter, she's 17 now, isn't she?
18 now.
You're 18. Oh my God, I can't believe you've got an 18-year-old daughter. But did she watch your documentary?
She did. I asked her not to. And but you know, she's 18, she can do what she wants.
Yeah.
She watched it, and She just came back. She was at her dad's, I think, and her boyfriend. I don't know. She watched it with somebody, but not with me. And then she just came back, gave me a huge hug, and she just loved me so much. And I was like,
yeah,
it was quite hard. But I mean, obviously, I told her everything as she was growing up, but not, you know, everything. But she knew stuff that I'd gone through. She knew about, you know, my not eating, my anxiety, my self-harming, the fact that she knew all of that. But obviously, she didn't really understand it. And now she's 18 and she's super clever and super wonderful. And she actually said to me the other day, she went, you know what, you've never ever raised your voice at me. And I was like, well, there's no reason to. You're just, she's just one of those, she's just perfect. I know every mum says that, but nothing. Apart from the fact she doesn't like cleaning and I'm a little bit OCD.
Okay. Well, they're allowed to be at that age. She'll get there in the end. I mean, that's what I'm hoping with my kids too. They're pigs.
How old are you?
I've got three. I've got a son who's 22, Joe, and well, nearly 22, and then Esme, who's 19, and Cece, who's 17. I mean, when you think of Joe, well, and Esme, who's 19, I mean, that's when your career skyrocketed, wasn't it, at that age?
To be honest with you, when I look back at my career, I don't even know what happened, to be honest with you. It all just went a bit, like, bonkers really quickly. And I think that was another reason for me getting extremely anxious, because I didn't really know what was going on. It was when, you know, I was a runner on Taggart when I was younger, so I used to make tea and coffee, and that was quite fun, and make sandwiches and give it to all the extras and not get paid. And then suddenly I got asked to go for an audition, and then I was got the audition. It's the first ever audition I did in my entire life, and I think because I'd worked so long behind the scenes, I wasn't fazed by anything. Rocked up in a pair of jeans and a sweatshirt, and everyone was all in neon, because that's what children television presenters do. Neon, hi! I was like, that, oh, what is going on? And I just did the audition, got the job, and then it all kind of just went a bit weird. So
yeah, no, but it was, I think it's because you, and I think you're right, having, if you know, if you've been around in that environment before actually being in front of the camera, it must have been much easier. And that again was, you know, part of your charm, was having seen some of the old footage of you, was that you were just so natural. You were just yourself, and you were this ball of joy. And it was, that's a kind of very rare thing to have as a television presenter, someone who is so accessible, despite being utterly, you know, stunning and gorgeous, which you still are. That's a rare thing. You know, everyone felt they could be your best friend, or were your best friend.
I was the girl next door that landed a bit lucky, and I was, everything I did, I was so beyond excited. I was just thinking, is this for real? And I think that was part of my downfall, because when I got on further into doing, I mean, the most amazing jobs in the world, Top of the Pops, Big Breakfast, you know, I just laughed nonstop. And then you'd sort of get taken advantage of, not by those sort of programs, but sort of the men mags. And I thought, oh, you know, I might do a couple of pictures. And then I didn't have good guidance. But do you know what? I look back on some of those pictures that I did and I think, yeah, I might have been a bit dumb and stupid and took all the compliments. I was like, oh, that's amazing. That's lovely. When I thought I was ugly and useless. And then suddenly someone wants to take a picture of you. And then, that's when it all kind of went a bit weird.
Yeah. But did you, I mean, when you're, you know, famously, and I know you've talked about this endlessly, but your photograph was superimposed on the Houses of Parliament. How did you see that image? What did that image represent for you? Was it you that you were looking at, or did you look at it as though it was some stranger?
It was a weird thing when I looked at it, and I just thought, because obviously in the 90s you're airbrushed like crazy. I hadn't seen the picture. I know I'd done the shoot. I know what happened. They'd said it wasn't going to get used. We're not sure what they're going to do with it. And then didn't get paid. And then suddenly it's on the Houses of Parliament. And I thought, that doesn't even look like me. And the worst thing, I think I said to a couple of people, the airbrushed my nipple, because I was, it's a picture for anyone that hasn't seen it. It's a picture of my backside on the House of Parliament, but they airbrushed my nipple because it was offensive. Not the fact that I was 100 foot high.
Totally naked.
Totally naked with my arse out for everybody to see. But no, not the nipple. That's offensive. No.
Yeah.
And that was when I suddenly thought they totally took advantage of me, and they didn't tell me, and I wasn't strong enough, and I was kind of like smiling, going on different things, and I think I remember one of the worst things I did, which I did cry. I went on Nevermind the Buzzcocks with Mark Lamar. Have you ever worked with him?
Yeah, I saw a clip like that. I'm sorry, Mark Lamar, I'm going to say, is a vicious little see you next Tuesday.
Yeah, well, he kind of like, I was doing quite well and it was fine. And then I can't remember, there was a little tit-tat thing. And then he said, look, if you're not going to show us your tits, what's the point in you being here? And I just thought, I felt about this big. And we were recording it as live. And I was just thinking, why would you do that? But I do know, because he'd asked me out and I said no. And then we went.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
But I didn't know what to do that in front of all these people. I was just thinking, oh my God, make this stop. Make it stop.
Yeah. But how much do you attach where you are now in your head to that image? Do you feel that was the turning point when you started to decline mentally after that?
No, definitely not. Do you know what? It was a weird time. It was kind of funny. It was weird. But I've been depressed since I was 16, 17. So I don't even know why. I couldn't sort of put my finger on anything. I'd either want to overeat, undereat. I just never thought I was good enough. And then I always attached myself to things. So I remember we did Grease as our school play for like our final year at school. Mm. And so I was Sandy, and then my friend Rajan, he was Danny. And we all sort of intertwined our stage life, so we're all kind of all going out with each other. So it's all
okay.
Do you know when you watch movies?
Yeah,
like Julia Roberts has went out with us. You know, obviously it's not like that. It's like Porterville High School. So but it was kind of, everyone was like going out with each other, and it was great. And I remember when it finished, that my heart just broke, and I realised that there was something I didn't want to let go of everybody, and I didn't want to move, and I didn't want to do different things, and I still feel the same every time I do a program, or you know, I meet somebody new and then they're going to leave. I just always got into this massive depression going, please don't leave me. Please, I don't know where it comes from.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I wonder where that fear of abandonment, it's fear of abandonment, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm
really.
Even my daughter says to me, Mum, you're so needy. You're beyond me. Because I was like, where are you going? Why? Can you not stay? She's like, Mum, I'm like, oh, please don't leave me.
Yeah, but at least you know that about yourself.
So
you know it, and you know, and also that's what mums do, and it's our prerogative to do that, I believe. But when you were when you were younger, were you fashion conscious when you were growing up?
Do you know what? When I thought, do you know what? You're going to destroy me because I was awful. So I used to go to under 18s Buster Brown's. This was a nightclub in Edinburgh. And my mum or dad would used to drop me off. And I used to get shouted at by the other kids going, oh, you snobby git. And I could get dropped off. Everybody else got the bus.
Okay.
So, and then I'd turn up and I wore a puffball skirt, knee-high socks.
Okay.
I know.
That's a look. So you were interested in clothes at that time because you put something together, whether you love it or loathe it, you put an outfit together.
Well, the thing is, I worked in Warehouse. Do you know Warehouse?
Mm-hmm, of course. Yeah.
Warehouse on a Saturday, and I worked in Russell and Bromley Sunday. But Warehouse, I really apologise to Warehouse right now, but we used to like take outfits on a Friday night and wear them out to Buster Brown's, take them home, wash them, get them back in the shop by the next morning.
That's so naughty, but so smart.
We didn't spill anything. We just wore them, got them cleaned, take them back, put them on. The only thing was you had to keep the tag on, so you had the tag scratching your back all night while you're down.
Oh my goodness. But so did you who were your influences? Was it just your friends, your style influences, or was it people, you know, you watched in films or on television or in magazines? Who did your mum influence you at all in your clothing?
Not really. Mum was kind of mum just liked her kind of baggy things because she always thought she was overweight. And she always said to me, you have to wear black because I was too chubby or whatever. And so she always said black was the best thing for me. So I would always wear black.
That's tough. As a child to hear that, we think it doesn't mean anything, but that's...
My head all the time. Yeah. I still wear black when I'm not feeling good. I must wear black because I'm too big or something. But I don't know. I think... I always just like the black outfits. You know, I was always I can't remember. I was always a Star Wars fan. I'd be quite happy to just dress up as a Jedi Knight. And if I could go with it every single day, I'm not fashion-y. I'm in t-shirts and baggy jeans, Levi's, originals. I love my trainer.
Do you wear clothes that like that? Because again, that's something I noticed was the way you dress, which is, you have a style, which is the, it's kind of like, I mean, when I kind of look at you, I feel you're disguising your femininity. It's like you're hiding behind your clothes.
Yeah, I am actually, I know it sounds really bad, but even at my age, I still get embarrassed about what I look like. So.
No, but don't be embarrassed about that. That's normal. I feel like that all the time.
So yeah, but dungarees, everything like that. I like that old kind of stuff. But then sometimes I buy a few dresses, like skin tight things, and then I put them on and I think, oh, I know this might sound stupid to you, but when you've got no hair, and I can wear a wig if I want to, but wigs make me feel uncomfortable because I don't like being something that I'm not. I have got different wigs. I've got pink ones, I've got white ones, I've got fun. But sometimes when I put on a really skin tight dress and I look at myself in the mirror, I just don't think I look feminine.
But you see, I think you can, because you've got such a beautiful face. I mean, I think, I don't know. I mean, losing your hair must have been, I think that's one of the hardest thing a woman can go through physically. Well, it is the hardest thing I think a woman can go through physically in terms of, you know, having something dramatic change about one's appearance. And I, you know, I have nightmares. I don't know what it means about losing my hair. I think it means you're sexually frustrated or something. I don't know. But, you know, when clumps of hair fall out and it's a nightmare. You know, that's a nightmare that I wake up with heart palpitations. So, I mean, how was that? Because it happened overnight, didn't it?
It was pretty much 4 weeks. So, I had the long blonde hair. Went off. I was working in Vegas looking for dead people, as you do. And we were in a graveyard and I was seeing a guy at the time and he was a cameraman. So he was like, Gail, you know, every time I went to the shower, I was blocking the plug holes. And I was thinking, okay, let's be calm about this. And then it was going and going every single day, more and more. And it was just coming out. And then, so when we were in the graveyard in Vegas, the lovely lady who was in the Winnebago, who was doing our makeup and everything, she looked at me and she's like, I had a bit there. And I said, just take it off, get rid of it.
Oh.
Because I don't know, I feel so awful. And so she just shaved it off. And then it just never grew back. It just never came back. Mm. So, I just remember phoning my ex-husband and saying, you've got to tell honey, my daughter, when I come home, mummy's got no hair. And she was, I cried the whole way home on the flight.
Mm.
And then when I got home, she was like, you look cool. And I was like, thank God, fine, I'll take this. I will take it.
Yeah.
It'll grow back, but it didn't. It grew back once for about 2 months, but it was a bit patchy. But, you know, but now I don't think I'd want it back. I feel like I've owned it now.
Yeah, you have.
And I feel like I've helped a lot of people and lots of people talk to me. And after losing my mom to cancer and when she lost her hair, I thought, you know what, I've got nothing to complain about. I've just got no hair. She died of cancer and she was, you know, and it was awful. So I'm actually quite lucky and I've got a good head and my daughter loves me. So bring it on. And if I can help other people, then that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And you've got amazing skin. I mean, you have unbelievable skin and you haven't aged at all. And you've got a beautifully shaped head. And there is one other person who I think looks as good with no hair, and that's Skin from Skunk
Nancy.
Oh, I love her. She's beautiful.
But so are you. Why don't you take a leaf out of her book? I mean, she was, you know, I can't see you in a skimpy little dress because that's not you, but it's that kind of, you know, cool tailoring.
You know what? I need to get myself a decent suit. So if you've got any.
Yeah.
I'd like a nice proper power suit because do you ever watch Billions?
No, I haven't. I haven't. Is it good?
There's a girl in Billions called, her real name is Asia, but she's skinhead. No nonsense. I love her. She's fantastic.
Yeah.
So I need a power suit. So
you need a power suit. Well, look up photographs of Skin too, because she wears. Yeah, look up. She's a good friend of mine, and I love her to bits. And she is one of the coolest things
people I know.
I've met her.
I will, and she's cool because she has no hair, and it's just the way she dresses. And you can do that too.
I know.
So please do yourself a fucking favor. Get out of those baggy clothes. Show off your beautiful figure.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And you had a breast reduction, didn't you? But you still got, what size are your boobs now?
I don't know now, because I just wear like those little Calvin Klein things, you know?
Yeah. But you still got a handful.
Yeah, a handful, yeah. But actually, when it got even worse. So when I decided to go and get them reduced, because I was losing weight, but I couldn't get them off my boobs. And then I had some lumps. And when I went with my daughter to like get an examination and everything, we were sitting in the waiting room and they said, could you come back in again and do the scan again? And I knew it. And I was like, oh, please, not another thing. Are you joking me? And then honey was like, are you okay? And I was like, yeah. Went back in again, came back out. And they went, could you come back in again one more time? I was like, oh God, please. And they went, you've got a whole cluster of lumps. They are benign, but we're a bit worried about them. And I was like, well, if I get my boob job done, can you get them out? And they said, yeah. But you know, it's going to take longer, and I said, just get them out, please. Don't, I can't cope.
Yeah,
so yeah, they cut everything out, and I got small boobs. And I think the day after I got my reduction, the surgeon had said to me, you know, stay in bed, stay here. He turns up, and I'm like ripping off everything, proper Scottish, like, I'm going home, I'm fine. And they're like, you need to do this. I was like, no, totally. And I came back home and I was so ill, and they kept phoning me that you need to be in hospital. I went, I'm taking the bandages off.
My God,
it's one of the best things I've ever done, because I had so
really
much. I was a 32 double D.
Well, do you know what I am?
What?
I am a 34 GH.
Shut the front door.
Yeah, look
them out, right?
They are bigger than my head.
But they're great. They're like all upright and smart.
No, they're too, I hate them. I would love to, I mean, I'm too old now. I'm not going to bother. I'm just going to give in to it. But I would have had one in the past, because not everything, I find that, and I've had this conversation before, but you can't look fashionable with big tits. It's impossible.
Yeah, that's what I was finding. It's like my bottom half was fine, 8 stone, and then suddenly you've got double D's that were they were starting to hang. And I
yeah,
and then I thought I'm going to.
Yeah.
When I remember
lob them off.
When they were giving me the anesthetic, and I was like, do you think I'm going to die?
No.
I didn't, because I was still here, because suddenly I panicked. I thought, is this really like awful, and it feels so vain. But I was in so much pain, and I just wanted them to go away.
Yeah.
So, and do you know what? The scar is nothing really. I've got a tiny really? Bit just there, but nothing. It's just a
really?
Shame, and I can't show anybody. I'd show you now, but you know, we'd be taken off air.
Yeah, no, well, just wear them in a good bra. Look after them. They've been through a lot, so don't wear a fucking Calvin Klein little T-shirt bullshit. I'm going to send you a decent bra, so you're going to tell me what you are. I'm going to send you a decent bra.
32C now, I think.
32C, okay, I'm going to find you a decent bra. So when you were a children's presenter, were there any rules about what you had to wear? I guess it was sort of colour was the main thing, was it?
Do you know what? In those days, we actually had stylists, so they would tell you what you could wear. So they'd come out and shop with you. You know, nowadays, okay. I don't know how it works nowadays in telly, but, you know, in those days, it was like, right, you've got a budget, you got stylists, we want colourful, we want bright, we want kids to smile and everything. And so we'd just go shopping. We'd maybe spend 2 days shopping, and they'd buy a whole handful of outfits. Some of them they'd get for free, some of them they'd have to pay for, and then some they could take back. But it was always very bright. It wasn't the sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But I didn't mind, because I was by that point very small. So,
is that when you had your was that when you had your eating disorder start?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was nothing to do with telly. I got it from just I just overate at school when I was unhappy. Then I stopped eating when I was unhappy, and then I overate again, and it's just one of those things that, unfortunately, that was the pattern that I went through. If I was happy, I don't know, it just depended on what mood I was in. So before I got into telly, I just stopped eating.
Yeah, and you were surviving. What were you surviving on? Jelly babies, and wine, pretty much.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
And wine, yeah. So I'd make sure, jelly babies in the morning to give me a bit of a sugar rush, which I should have maybe had fruit or something. Have the jelly babies, go to the gym, do a couple of hours in the gym, work all day, get home, bottle of wine, and then fall asleep, and then get up and do it all again. It's like Groundhog Day. And then weigh myself every single day, like 4 or 5 times a day.
Oh, God, Gail. And so, yeah. I mean, it's just terrible to be a prisoner. In that, where prisoner to one's body is,
and I had so many wonderful awful. Friends. We can help you. And I was like,
yeah,
there's nothing wrong whatsoever. I'm completely normal. And you know, I'd avoid dinner parties. I'd avoid nights out. There was always something that came up. I'd go, oh yeah, I'm not too well, or you know, just so I didn't have to go out, because I just didn't think I was good enough, and I didn't think I was thin enough, or I don't know. It was just it's still. Bonkers in my head. Why did I do that?
Yeah, but well, again, at least you know that now, and you've got it under control. But yeah, when you were presenting Top of the Pops, which I remember it so well, Thursday night, 7 o'clock. What was the sort of highlight? Because you had that lovely producer from those days who was on your documentary. God, he's a nice man.
He's the nicest man in the world. He's so lovely,
and he. So clearly adores you. He was just one of the highlights of the of your doc.
I was so delighted when he came to visit my wee flat, and he was always a great friend, and he's just such a hard worker. And working on that show was like a family. You know, the shows are like families, but they, like Chris said in my documentary, he did say that they were slightly worried, but the thing is, I could pull it off, no problem. And my daughter is 5'8", maybe, skinny and awake, but I watch her, I keep an eye on her, and she can, you know, she's hollow.
Yeah.
I'm so pleased, and she's got no problem with food whatsoever, because I was so worried that she might take what I used to do to myself. She's a strong, independent, if I want a pizza, I'm having a pizza. If someone got a pizza in the same room as me, my head would be exploding, thinking, oh, how do I get out of this? I don't know what to do. It's awful. But Chris was amazing. I think he knew, and he didn't say too much, but he was always just like, your best friend that you knew if I was really going down a bad route, he was going to be there.
You know, catch you.
You hug and you know that they're going, we don't want to say anything, but we know. I used to get hugs from him and I was like, yeah. Oh. And then I'd feel guilty and I think, oh God, I don't want.
Yeah, that's another thing that I really noticed again from the documentary is this guilt you carry, you know, about yourself. It's like you apologize constantly for just for being you, and you are fucking amazing.
Well, I don't know about that, but my daughter always says, you know, I always say sorry for everything, even if I don't know people I don't know that they walk past me and I go, oh, sorry. I think, what am I saying sorry for? Why am I apologizing if someone like walked in front of me? But I don't know where it comes from. Mm. I do.
Have you ever had to say apologize for anything you've worn?
I probably would have to. Yeah, I mean, gosh, when my hair was falling out, I think I attempted a Mohican or something, and I saw some pictures, and I was like, what was I thinking of? I was just thinking, do you know what, just do something with it. I think I wore a dress that had Elvis on it once for the big breakfast. It was really cool, and everyone was like, what are you wearing? Like, even my wedding picture, I got a really, just a really simple dress from Selfridges, and because I didn't want anything fancy. We were getting married in a registrar's office, and then I remember it was in Heat magazine. So there was a picture of, I can't remember who else got married around the same time, who looked beautiful. And they were like, oh, stunning. And then it turned it over and there's a picture of me in this little silver thing. And then it says, what was Gail thinking?
Oh, no, on your wedding day.
I can't even get that right on my wedding day. Come on. I just, you know, I was still sort of wanting something to cover me up. But it was just a little, it was like a little slip dress, like a Charlton sort of thing.
It sounds gorgeous and perfect for you, this kind of petite, pretty blonde. It sounds absolutely ideal. I'm going to have to look it up.
I got ripped for it. I just wanted something really simple, really floaty. And then I did actually rock it when it came to the party afterwards. Not that everyone could remember, but I got, what was his name? That lovely designer that unfortunately killed himself. Alexander McQueen. But I don't know anything about fashion, but I got like, it was like a
strapless.
Yeah, it was a wee top, and I had a big like veil thing. Ooh. And then really like flary black trousers that went with it. So it's like up to the midriff and then a bit of tummy showing and then these huge, and I loved it so much. I've still got it, but I don't think I can put it in.
That sounds, you got to give it to Honey. You got to give it to Hun Bun.
For sure.
I'm 5'1", she's 5'8".
Okay, well, you have to get, yeah, she can wear the top with a different pair of trousers.
But she's going to have to get the trousers, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So when you look back, is there anything, do you have any regrets when you look back?
No, do you know what? I don't believe in regrets because I think, yeah, obviously, if I knew more about money, I would probably have sort of invested wisely, but I didn't. I was just one of those people that, If you ask me for money, I go, okay, fine, I'd find it. I've only just met you. Yeah, have it. But actually, that was the sort of person I was. And if you needed help, I'd help you. And then a lot of people kind of like screwed me over that way and they would not pay it back.
Yeah. So
I think if I was given financial advice, yeah, but I would not change a thing. I wouldn't change anything because I think regrets are, it's a terrible word because it makes, you are who you are because of your life. You can, if you go to bed at night and think, oh God, I wish I'd done that, you're going to have a very stressful life.
I absolutely agree with that. And it's all about living in the moment. And, you know, what you're saying is the epitome of that. It's living for the second. And I think a lot of, you know, you've been through so much, so you really value that and you take that on board.
Listen, if it wasn't a little bit mental and a little bit homeless, I wouldn't be up for a BAFTA, so...
Well, that's true. That is very true. So there is a silver lining to everything, sleeping on a park bench. There is a silver lining. But my darling, when you had your, when your hair fell out with alopecia, how did that affect your wardrobe and how you dressed? Did you go straight from the kind of girl next door to big black baggy sweaters and things to hide?
yeah, I find it really difficult because I just didn't feel feminine and I didn't feel pretty. And like I say, when I tried to buy a dress, I just thought, oh my God, I couldn't even look at myself in the mirror. But I felt I need to keep going on. I need to be positive for other people. And but yeah, I literally was buying trainers, baggy jeans. I've got so many sweatshirts you wouldn't even believe. I just turned into like a teenage boy.
Yeah.
Just regressed into a teenage
boy. Yeah. I mean, you still dress like a teenage boy though.
I do still, yeah. And
you do. You have these wonderful bits of statement jewellery. But I think, but weirdly, it does kind of suit you. It's kind of, it's you. It's sort of become a part of you now.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to attempt to wear a dress at the weekend, maybe, if my daughter comes over. So I bought a few dresses, but I just, well, obviously, there's nowhere to go now. So
yeah,
I bought them all on lockdown thinking, oh, that looks nice. And then I thought, where am I going? Going nowhere apart from going to the gym. So if I could live in gym clothes and dungarees, I'd be very happy. But I'm going to make an effort because my eyelashes actually grew back over lockdown, which was...
Did they? Did they really? That's amazing.
I actually have eyelashes that are my own.
But that maybe your hair will follow after your eyelashes.
I really hope it doesn't because I'm so used to it now. There's nothing at all. So a lot of people think I shave it. I was like, I have not. I think I shaved my hair right in the very beginning. So it's now been, Honey was one when my hair fell out. She's 18, so 17 years and nothing. I don't buy razors, nothing. And I quite enjoy it. So when I go to the gym, I always say to the ladies, I'm just popping the showers. 2 minutes later, I'm out. I'm going, yeah. They're, in the they're shampooing, they're conditioning. Yeah. Like, check me out. See you later. I'm going out.
Brilliant. Brilliant. You must, probably more than anyone who I've interviewed, have the need for a comfort blanket. One item that you've, you know, has kept you, you feel has kept you safe and you turn to. It could be anything. It could be a teddy bear or anything. Do you have something like that? Is it that ring you're wearing?
Oh, I don't leave the house without this.
Okay.
So that's always on. Obviously, my daughter is my everything.
Yeah. You can't, she's not a comfort blanket that you can pop in a suitcase, is she?
My comfort blanket is movies.
Okay.
Movies or social media.
Okay. You're becoming the teenager again.
But you know what, I speak to lots of really nice people and...
Yeah.
Because I suffer from insomnia, so... Sometimes I watch movies and then I go onto Twitter or Instagram or whatever and someone will go, are you okay? I don't get anything mean. I've never had it. I think maybe had like maybe two mean messages about what I look like. I just block them. I will say this to kids. I'm like, block, report, done. You know?
Yeah.
Don't pay any heed to people that are mean to you. You don't know them.
Yeah, exactly. And also it's like what other people think of you is none of our business, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like for young people that go into all these things and then they want to look like this or do that or take on abuse from people, I say to my daughter, block, report, simple. Two of us are just like, easy, don't care what you think. But it's quite nice because I've got lots of people that watch movies in the night and they go, what do you think? What should we watch? And I was like, oh, I don't know. What do you think? I don't know them. They don't know, well, they might know me, but... It's quite nice to have that little bit of a comfort blanket at night time. But Netflix movies, old movies. I've got all my I've still got my DVD player.
Oh my God, Gail.
I still actually have a VHS player.
You don't, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's probably worth a fortune now.
I know, and I've got a Betamax.
Oh my goodness, you are a bit of a hoarder? Would you just keep select things? Do you keep clothes that have memories for you? Do you like your party dress from your wedding?
I do have a lot of clothes, but then when I became bankrupt and I went bankrupt for spending too much money, basically I was homeless and I didn't fill out a tax return thing because I thought if you're homeless, I was a bit naive. I thought if you're homeless, why would you? You know, I've not earned any money for 2 years. So they looked back, the tax people looked back on what I earned when I was in my 20s and said, well, if you were earning that much when I was like, well, I was homeless. So they sent me a huge tax bill, which obviously I couldn't pay. I did get apology from them at one point, but I had to put everything that I owned into storage. everything, and I couldn't afford to get it back out. So I watched Storage Hunters just in case.
Okay. So is your stuff still in storage?
Yeah, I don't know where it is.
How do you not know where it is?
My ex put it into storage when I got sectioned, so I don't know where it is. I've got no clue.
And he doesn't know? You don't want to ask him?
Contact.
You lost contact. So is he the father of Honey?
No. He was just like someone I went out with for a couple of years, and then he's...
Oh, okay.
So anyway, yeah. He put everything into storage. I paid for everything. I got sectioned, came back out, and it was all gone, and he was gone, and yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean,
I was a little bit excited myself at the beginning, and I thought, well, you know what? It's stuff.
Yeah.
I'm just going to have to start again. So, yeah, I lost everything, really. But it was quite good, you know? I'm still here, and I started again, and I still have... I'm sure the wedding dress is somewhere. I need to find it, but I hope it's still here. But I do have lots of really shocking dresses that I used to wear thinking I was super cool.
I bet you do. I bet. My darling, okay, so if you, let's say you've got the BAFTAs are virtual this year, but if it wasn't, I want to know, A, how much of a panic you'd be about finding something to wear and how you were going to look, and B, what you would choose. What would be your kind of party dress for the BAFTAs? Is it something you've got, or would you go and get something?
Well, this is what I was going to ask you. Since I've come to have a wee chat with you, I thought you could give me some advice, because it's still going to be Sean. So we're going to try and get my laptop up and a few people, obviously distance, and we're all going to get dressed up. So what do I wear?
Okay, well, I need to know what body shape you are. Do you know what body shape you are?
Have you ever seen the crankies? I'm joking.
No.
Don't be so horrible about yourself. Are you still quite curvy, or have you got the menopause, the kind of midlife little bit of a
weight loss?
You could squeeze my tummy. Yeah, it's got a wee tummy, but I'm like...
Oh, that's all right.
But do you have a waist? Or are you a bit of a brick like Kate Moss?
Is Kate Moss a brick? What is a brick?
Yeah, she's someone who's kind of straight, got no waist, just straight up and down, kind of quite square in their torso.
Maybe.
You know what? I think this is a conversation we need to have after this. I think that in tone, I can, because I would need to, I'd definitely help you. I think you've got to look fucking great, Gail. I think you need to just shock everyone. I really do. I think you need to invest in, get a makeup artist, obviously not a hairdresser. You need a makeup artist, and you need to really blow it out of the water.
That's what you're
going to do. And let's have another conversation about this. And you're going to strip off into your bra and knickers, and I'm going to see what shape you are. And then we'll talk, and we'll work out what you're going to wear. But I think it is that kind of androgynous, that a sexy androgynous look is good for you. Not a dress or anything. It's kind of, I don't know yet, but something cool. And you can be androgynous and still have feathers, or it's like someone like Brandon Flowers, you know, from The Killers.
Oh my God.
His kind of look.
His look would be a great look for you. And also, I interviewed a girl called Jess Gillum, who is an incredible saxophonist. She's a child still, but she's got the talent of someone who's 100 years old. And she wears these amazing suits, kind of brocaded suits, and looks very cool. So, but let's have another conversation. So my final question to you, Gail Porter, is... what is your wardrobe malfunction? What's the worst wardrobe malfunction you've had when your clothes have let you down? Or maybe in your case, no clothes have let you down.
Yeah, probably my major malfunction would be the fact that I just went naked quite a lot in the 90s.
Yeah.
But yeah, to my daughter, I was like, do you know what? I was just a bit too hot, and it was quite easy. Because the thing is, I was a weird shape, so I had massive boobs, and then I was tiny. So I think at that point, when I was doing all these photo shoots, I was 7 stone with these huge boobs. So they used to come in all the stylists and go, we can't get anything to fit you. Oh, just go naked. And I was like, all right, okay. So I think they all sort of had an agenda and I just went with it because nothing fitted me. I couldn't get anything to fit me. I just had such a weird shape. But I think pretty much everything I wear is a bit of a malfunction because I'm not good with fashion. I'm not good with makeup.
Yeah, but it's not so much about what you wear. It's just like, so for example, the worst wardrobe malfunction I had was I was sitting next door to, I was at this very kind of fancy dinner at Windsor Castle and I was in between Prince Philip and Prince Andrew, Edward, one of them. I had this beautiful dress and had these sort of spaghetti straps and I was just sitting there and then the straps broke and the front flipped down. I had no bra on and flashed my tits to everybody. So that was a wardrobe malfunction where the dress let me down. So it's not about... I've looked shit hundreds of times and worn terrible things. So something that's...
I don't think anything's let me down. I think the worst thing I've ever done is I went to a party and I wore high heels and I had to get taken in by my lovely gay friend and he was holding me. I was like, I can't walk like this. It looks like I've wet myself. And I said, do you know what, I'm just going to take them off for a minute. And I took them off. And then by the time I came back, they were gone. I don't know where they've gone.
Oh, no.
And then I had to leave. This club, and then there was lots of paparazzis and everything, and they were like, I'm walking and my feet were filthy because it was like everybody was dancing and I just thought, oh, do you know what, I'll find the shoes eventually, and I had these black feet coming out.
Oh my god.
And I never found the shoes. I don't know who took them, but someone took the pair of shoes for me, a pair of Jimmy Choo.
Okay. Oh no, even worse.
So well, if anyone's got my shoes, that was pretty bad.
Yeah, I'd like them back, please. Those Jimmy Choos. So, Gail, is there anyone when you were doing Top of the Pops whose style blew you away? I think one of the most stylish people who I saw on that documentary is Charlene Spiteri from Texas.
Do you know what? When I met Charlene at Top of the Pops, because we were both Scottish, it was an instant, we got on fine. And I just thought everything about her hair, you know, she used to be a hairdresser in Glasgow. And but everything about her was so amazingly stylish. Paul Weller, every time.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't fault Paul Weller at all. Damon from Blur, I had a massive crush. And I mean, he could literally wear, well, I would like him just to wear a pair of pants, but that's not going to happen. But every time he came in, he just had that sort of Britpop cool. But we did have Prince in once. And I mean, when it comes to style, he was just out of this league. He was just absolutely fantastic. And he was so small and perfect and everything he wore. And I always was just like, wow, how'd you dance in those heels so fantastically? But I was a big Prince fan. But yeah, there was lots of styles. And even people like Justine from Elastica, you know, kind of like laid back style. Betty Boo when she came on.
Oh, yes.
Remember Betty Boo?
Of course, yeah. And Susie Sue was great from Susie and the Banshees. She was fabulous.
Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah, no, never got around that one.
She had great. Oh, she did. She looked absolutely nuts.
Yeah,
see, Madonna's just up there.
Yeah.
I think she came to Top of the Pops once, but I actually had to introduce her. And when my daughter saw it, she was like, oh my God, you saw Madonna? I was like, no, it was a pre-record. I never met her. But kids are like, oh my God, she was there.
All right, darling. Well, listen, you've been so fantastic, Gail, and open and warm and everything that you should be so proud of. You're an extraordinary person and it's been a real privilege to talk to you, so thank you.
I know, but thank you.
It's true. And we're going to speak again to get you sorted out for the BAFTAs, okay?
I know. How exciting.
Gail, thank you so much for your time and really good luck for the BAFTAs next week. I'm absolutely praying on my knees that you win. If you haven't seen Being Gail Porter, you can find it on BBC iPlayer now. Right, we're nearly off, but I must mention our pyjama party. Find it on our website at mywardmal.com and email any stories or suggestions about the show to help@mywardmal.com. You can also find and follow us on the usual socials at mywardmal. And please rate and review us, and one day I just might stop asking. Finally, thanks to our mesmeric band duo, find and buy their new album at duoguitarmusic.com or on their socials at Duo Guitar Music. Thanks again to Gail, and of course, thanks to you for listening. Catch up soon. Until then, my wardrobe is officially closed.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.